welcome to the Life Debt Podcast. I'm your host, Johnny Orme, and today we're talking about The Book of Boba Fett, Episode 5. Or should we just call it what it really is, The Mandalorian, Chapter 17. Because, oh my god, that was an episode of epic proportions. It answered quite a lot of things to do with The Mandalorian. Sorry, mess in my car. So, what did we get? We got the continued adventures of one Mr. Din Djarin. We got the answer as to where is the Armorer. We got the answer to what will Din Djarin be flying next. And we got a history lesson. And it was all beautifully crafted, beautifully directed, wonderfully executed by Bryce Dallas Howard, who, at this point, if you know, she's done three episodes of The Mandalorian. Well, two episodes of The Mandalorian, one episode of Book of Boba Fett. And she has proven, time and again, that she deserves her own freaking Star Wars film. Just putting it out there, like many others. Give her a damn Star Wars film, people. This is one that you would not cancel. So, what did we get? We got Din Djarin, like, the opening, like, okay, so the way I watched it yesterday, because I'm recording this the day after, because despite wanting to sit and record, fortune does not favour those with a stinking headache that lasts pretty much all day and night. So, instead of recording last night, I'm recording this morning. So I watched it in I watched the first 5 minutes on a 5 minute break. God, I was on for I had a 10 minute break, went, got myself a drink, sat and watched like the opening bit up until the title comes up. So I basically watched his whole interaction in the Avatar. And I'm sat there looking at this, and I'm like, oh, I wonder what is this Jabba's kitchen? Could this be the Boba Fett's kitchen now? Like the then we'd already seen the kitchen, so you know, I was like, oh wait, no, it's not. And then we see this silhouette of Mando, and as soon as he steps in front of this, in front of those like kind of plastic door things, like you knew exactly who that was, and it was, I wouldn't say shocking, it was like excitement building. So I'm like, oh, okay, we're gonna see some Mando action, amazing, love it. Thinking, alright, okay, so this is gonna be the bit that leads, this is gonna be like, this is what he's doing now, and then it's gonna lead into him going to Tatooine. And that didn't happen. So, you know, so basically I watched that whole interaction with the Platoonians, getting his leg singed by the Darksaber, cutting that guy in half, which was freaking nuts. And taking off his head, I'm like, this is insane. This is like a whole serious level of Mando. Like, he's gone. You kind of get this feeling like he's kind of playing the role of badass bounty hunter. Instead of being the badass, I mean, he's always going to be the badass bounty hunter, but Grogu softened him, I think. Like, he didn't need to cut that guy in half, but he did it. I think he needed to cut his head off to take, but he didn't need to, like, I kind of feel like he didn't need to do it, and he's like dealing with some anger issues. So then we get him like going through Halo, which was, I was like, it took me out. It took me out. I'm not gonna lie, Halo took me out a little bit, because I was just like, oh, they're doing Halo. But because it wasn't like all grassy and you know, some sort of super weapon kind of thing, I didn't feel phased. You know, I was like, okay, so it's different, but okay, it's Halo. And then, yeah, I was like, so in my second break, I watched like the next 10 minutes, which was him going to the boss, the Ishii tier boss, who's like, I've got another job for you, sit down. And I'm like, oh, for God's sake, just give him the information. He's not going to do it. He's injured. He's got to go heal. Come on. And it's just like, oh, no, you got to sit down. I want to talk business. Don't talk business. I want to have a meal with you. And he's like, just tell me. Right, no, I'm not going to tell you. I'm just going to take this because there's a bounty on this guy. I'm going to take it and get the credits from that. Because you're peeing me off now. So it was like, right, okay. He still knows how to, he still knows the art of the deal. Does our boy did. And he basically, all he wants to know, he just wants the information of where do I get a lift to go down to like the lowest levels. It's like, seriously, just tell the guy. So he finally gets that lift, and I'm like, why? He's like, is he looking? And like, instantly, I'm like, he's looking for Mandalorians. That's what he's doing that. So he goes, and he starts seeing the markings. And I was like, cool, we've got some more Mandalorians coming up. And it was quite funny, because last night, after I'd finished the episode, a friend of mine, a guy called Greg, started watching it, and he literally live tweeted the episode, but just in messages to me, and we were like kind of talking about it as he was going through it, and he was like, that symbol that was on the armorer's thing, that was at the covert, he's found a covert, oh, that's amazing. And I'm like, just wait, because I did not expect what came next. I did not expect him to walk in and then just see the freaking armorer. And I'm like, oh, she survived. That was cool. That was seriously cool. And then when she says heal him, and we get Paz Vizsla, I was like, wait a minute, didn't he die? Pretty sure he died, but he didn't, which was good, which was cool. Because I'm going to go back at some point. I'm going to watch episode 8 again. And I'm pretty sure you see his helmet in the pile of dead Mandalorian helmets. But I could be wrong. Could just be like a generic, kind of like a design that a couple of them had. But I was sure that I saw it. But then, like, look at the guy. The guy is beefy. The guy can take a hit. The guy had a Gatling gun, for God's sake. And, you know, out of all the ones who you could be like, yeah, dude survived, he was the one who was going to definitely survive. I mean. Anyway, so he turns up. He heals it. Din. Good old back to spray. And he presents the Darksaber to the armorer. And I'm like, oh, just like her and that. That's going to be some serious lore. And yeah, like, you know, like this is like forged Beskar from like 10,000 years ago. You know, all this talk of the Empire nearly lasted 30 years. You know, you look at this, like we reigned for 10,000. You know, it's like, oh, this is so nuts. This is amazing. And that's kind of where I got up to on my second break. Like, they had that chat, and like I stopped just as that bit when that bit ended. So I ended up like the next scene. So the first scene I watched when I got after I got home, I said, so daughter was very tired, so my wife was like, right, I'm gonna get to bed. And I was like, right, I'll cook tea. So of course I ain't just cooking tea in silence. So I stuck on I finished off the episode. Like half hour left of it, and it was brilliant. So I started off when they're moving the forge into place, and as soon as they talk about the Darksaber, like, well, that was it. Like, in the previous scene, it ends with her saying, oh yeah, it was like Darksaber, it was created by Tar Vizsla, and you see Paz Vizsla, and this was when they named him. They full on said his name in the episode, and as soon as like she passes it back to Mando, you see he's like squaring up, he's like, I'm gonna get this. And I was like, oh, he's in for some shit. So yeah, they're fixing the forge, and she's like, yeah, Beskar should not be made into weapons. Beskar should be made, Beskar's for armor, not for weapons. And he's like, right, take it. Forge something for a foundling. And I'm like, oh, so dude has literally learned nothing from his time in season 2. But he wants it for a specific foundling. And he's like, I want something for Grogu. And it's like, oh, this is his kid. Excellent. So we're getting that, and that's that. I'm like, yes, just content of pure utter joy and brilliance. So she forges, I think she's forged like a little chain of some sort, and maybe he's gonna stick the ball on it, which I think would be amazing. I'd love that. And he's like, yeah, I'm gonna go see him. I want to see him again. I want to see how he's doing. He's with a Jedi. And she's like, yeah, but Jedi shouldn't form attachments. And he was like, but that's against our creed. So I guess, you know, Din's pretty much just like, look, yeah, attachments. He's not allowed to have attachments, but he's a foundling as well. He's my foundling. Kind of like, oh, and like they're already attached. It's gonna take a lot to break that, I think. And she ties up in a little bag, and it's very sweet. And then he asked her about Bo-Katan, and this was where like I'm just like, oh, history lessons and just pure utter joy. And she's like, yeah, Bo-Katan. She was like a curse on, like, essentially the Kree's family are a curse on Mandalore. She gets the Darksaber, but not through creed and battle. Oh, she claims to rule Mandalore by name alone. Oh. And like the prophecy says that if the elite ruler of Mandalore wields the Darksaber without winning it in battle, it shall curse the it'll bring destruction upon Mandalore. Holy mother of lords, totally happened. And if we hadn't been stuck up on Concord Dawn, it would have happened to us too. Oh my god, like, I'm sorry, I'm just sat over here fangasming at every bit of just of Star Wars lore that has kind of cropped up in everywhere else. So it's like, you know, we've had Clone Wars, we've had Clone Wars, you got Rebels. At this point, I'm just, this is a, a smorgasbord of just perfect content. And then it gets even better. And I'm literally, as Greg was watching it, he was like, every time, I just said, it gets better. Mate, it gets better. Trust me, it gets better. And the last time I said it was after this bit. And this was like one of the top tier moments of this episode. This is top tier Mando content, you know. Where we see the Knight of a Thousand Tears. And I'm like, so I'm like, if we ever see it, I want to see like what happens. I want to see, you know, I want to see people on the ground. I want to see like kind of Mandalorians trying to, you know, fighting the Empire and all this stuff. And it was nothing like that. And I'm glad, because, you know, we've seen Mandalorians fighting people. You know, what's the difference if it's mercenaries or stormtroopers? You know, at the end of the day, you know, it's a bunch of Mandalorians fighting. And we know that they can fight. We know that they are very good at fighting. You know, they're warriors. But what we got was so simple. You know, we just saw it. We just saw TIE bombers in Legion flying over. sorry. Flying over Mandalore, bombing, dropping bombs here, there, and I'm like, oh my god, like all these like little settlements going, and you see them all going over Sundari. We've just seen Sundari in freaking live action, and they just blow it up in the most extravagant freaking explosion in any Star Wars film or content. I mean, okay, yes, the Death Star explosions would have been much grander, much bigger, much more fireball-y. But this was like, this explosion just was like, oh. No wonder Boba Fett, Clay, says that they turn Mandalore to glass, because after an explosion of that magnitude, that planet is screwed. And just to top it off, yeah, we're going to send down K2 droids to just blast at everybody. Every dead body laid on the ground. They're just going to go bow, 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 bow with probe droids as well. I was like, oh, that was just so very well done. And I'm like, I mean, when I saw that bit, I was like, how do you top this? How? And then you get Din doing Darksaber training. And I'm like, oh, that's insane. And not only did we get Darksaber training, we got the armor of speaking of Mandoa. And I was like, oh, just content. Just content. Amazing. And, you know, basically we see that he's, how he's struggling to wield the Darksaber. I mean, we saw him using it in a fight and he was kind of clunky with it. But this was a whole other level of, okay, so he's really struggling to use this weapon. Because, granted, we don't see him use it in Mandalorian. We just see him holding it and carrying it. So I was like, right, okay, cool. That's, you know, and it shows that he's not perfect. And I think, like, once he got the spear, he was very good with using the spear. You know, he was very adept with using the spear. Which was like, oh, okay, so Mando can just use any weapon. I mean, cool, it's what you kind of expect. But, you know, at the end of the day, you can't always be perfect. And, You know, so, which was good. It was good to see him and having to learn it and kind of find out that he's, you know, it's like, well, what do you mean he's fighting against the blade? It's like, how does one fight against the blade? I don't, wasn't quite, wasn't quite, like, getting it, but, because I kind of never expected lightsabers to be kind of heavy, if you know what I mean. You kind of expect them to be quite light. I know, like, Mark Hamill said that, you know, Lucas would often say that these things are very heavy. That, you know, lightsabers were heavy, there's a lot of power to them. But, like, I wasn't expecting that to be the case now. Because you kind of see, like, Jedi using them, but maybe that's because of their Force connections and everything. Like, this is their weapon, the weapon that they forge using the Force and all this stuff. So, yeah, I'm like, okay, so that kind of adds to some of the lore, and I thought that was pretty cool. And then you get, like, now this was, yeah, a couple of good moments in this fight, in this training sequence, where, like, he's learning how to use it. And the armor basically chucks him off the edge of this thing. Now, they're falling out to open. He's about to fall into open space. He's like, you just hit this. Whoa! And then you see him pop back up with his jetpack. I was like, cool. And, you know, he just keeps training and using this darksaber. And the armor, like, it's quite comical. Like, she just bops him on the head with her, like, tongs and a hammer. You know, she's like, donk, donk, right? No, you're not doing a good job. So he's like, look, I can, let's go again. He's like, look, you're not picking this up yet. You need to kind of learn. And then, oh, out comes Paz Vizsla. And he's like, yeah, you should be having that. Maybe it doesn't belong to you. Maybe I should have it because that was, because it was forged by my ancestor. Blah, blah, blah. And then you realise that Vizslas are basically just pricks. I stand by that. So then he fights Paz Vizsla for the darksaber, and Paz manages to beat the living shit out of him. I'm like, oh my god, that's insane. Calm it down, just a little maybe. No, Paz is out for blood. I think, you know, Paz isn't just content with winning it in combat. You know, just, he's not content with disarming, he just wants to kill Mando. And I'm like, oh, you are such an angry, angry giant man. So like, we get this mega fight between the two of them, and in the end, Paz, I mean, like, Paz gets the darksaber, and it's pretty, I mean, you can see him struggling to use it as well, but, you know, because, I think, also, because he's so bulky, it really weighs him down. Like, whatever this power is in this darksaber, it weighs Paz Vizsla down quite a bit. So, it gives Mando the edge to best him. You know, so basically, you know, even though Paz has the darksaber and pretty much wipes the floor with Mando, he still loses. Armor's like, yep, done. Paz Vizsla, have you ever removed your helmet? No. Has it ever been removed by anyone else? No. And Mando, you could just see it, Mando's like, oh crap. So she asks him, and he's like, yes. And it's like, no, she doesn't ask for a reason or anything. It's just like, yeah, okay, you're not Mandalorian anymore. I'm sorry. I do believe we know reasons why you are wrong. Because you are, like, the leader of a cult. That's what it is. She's a leader of a cult, and she's telling him that he can't be part of the cult anymore. And I'm like, hey, dude's getting out lucky. Dude's getting out with his skin intact, at least. So, you know, he picks up the Darksaber and takes his jetpack and just walks off. Because she's like, hey, look, the only way that you can atone for what you've done is by going to the waters under the mines of Mandalore. He's like, well, Mandalore's gone. And she was like, yep, this is the way. And I'm like, oh, that's not good. That is going to bite him in the backside soon. I'm kind of interested, like, I think this is kind of where season 3 is going to go, and they are pushing for the reclamation of Mandalore, in whatever form that could be. So I think season 3 is going to be a season of epic proportions, just based on that. So then it's like, right, okay, has he gotten a message from Fennec Shand and Boba Fett? Because he is just going to Tatooine. Okay. He must have already had a message and he's just building up towards going. Maybe he was delaying or whatever. No, he's going to see our old friend, Pelimoto. Oh. And it was a joy. An absolute joy to see her again. Like, I loved seeing her in that brief moment on Mos Eisley where she's walking along with the pit droids. But, oh, we got her for like half an episode here. And it was just wonderful. I mean, how do you reintroduce Pelimoto? Well, you start with having a BD droid, and I'm like, so cute. Like, I now know, like, when, like, Lego make the buildable characters, so, like, they did a Porg, they've done R2, they've done Yoda, they've done, BB-8, Dio, and the child. Like, I'm like, come on, people, make a BD. Make a BD droid, because that will sell like hotcakes. So we get this BD droid, and it's attacked by a Womp Rat. You got Pelimoto coming out with her pit droids, her treadwell, and R5, and she's like, go get it, go get this Womp Rat, go say BD, and they're like, no. And so she has this whole argument with the droids about saving the BD droid before she is attacked by the Womp Rat. I've never, like, this, her yelling, it's chewing! I'm like, I mean, you're being attacked, but I'm finding this hilarious. And this is just, it's just, Amy Sedaris is on form. I think Bryce Dallas Howard was like, right, here's the script, and just go. Go have fun. Because I have a feeling this is the most loose version of the script that Amy Sedaris has been given. Because, like, she has taken, I mean, normally the character is hilarious anyway, but she has taken the hilarity to a whole new level here, and it is just amazing. Like, oh my god, it's chewing. In comes Mando, blasts the Womp Rat. Done. Excellent. And now, part of me is like, oh, she's gonna ask where the Razor Crest is, and she's gonna take the mick out of him, because it's like all the work that she's done on it. No, these guys have been in touch, these guys have spoken. And she has promised him promised that she's going to find him a replacement for the Razor Crest. And, oh my god, like, I was like, I'd heard a rumor not gonna lie. I'd heard the rumour from Desmond Bolton. So it didn't come as quite of a shock to me, but it was still like kind of intake of breath, because even Desmond Bolton was like, look, it kind of looks like it. I think it's a Naboo N1 starfighter. Can't be sure. All signs point to it, but I don't want to be like, this is definite. So I'm like, so when it comes out and it's like this wreck, I'm like, oh, that's amazing, it's an N1 starfighter. Yeah, you ain't gonna fly that. And then you get the montage of them fixing it up, including a slight break for them to talk to a couple of Jawas. And we find out that Pelimoto dated a Jawa, and Jawas are furry. So we're getting a slight hint at what a Jawa is like under that hood. They're furry. And then it's like, the Jawa asks her something, she's like, no, I'm working on me now. So it's like, oh, the Jawa's asking her on a date. That's hilarious. So yeah, they get this thing built, and it's, and like the astromech, the droid compartment, well, that's been converted, it's got a nice little bubble on it. So I think we all know who's going in there. That's been built for your friend of mine, the Grogu. And they, you know, she's like, right, it's ready, go for it. So he takes it up for a test flight. And, you know, I'm like, oh, this thing's going to blow up. This thing, he's going to crash, and he's going to end up talking to Boba Fett. And it's going to be like a whole thing. No. This ship is fantastic. It's got the speed. It's got everything. The fact that I love the design. I love how they've taken the N1 Starfighter design and they've twisted it a little. They've taken this sleek, beautiful ship and turned it into like a souped up racer. You know what I mean? And to even state that fact even more, we get this sequence of Din flying it, and it's like watching the pod race all over again from episode 1. He takes the damn Boonterieve route and goes straight into Beggar's Canyon, and I'm like, oh, this is like, ah, oh, we're literally seeing shots from the Phantom Menace here, just with this instead of a pod racer. And normally I'd be like, oh, that's annoying, like that's a cop out. Oh no, it was a thing of beauty. And then he takes it in space, and he lets it rip, and he flies around that civilian transport ship. And then he gets approached by two X-Wings, and I'm like, oh, come on. And he's like, he's doing the whole spiel, he's doing everything they tell him to. You know, he's answering the questions. And it's this young guy, and it's like, oh, this is, oh dear. And then we get, oh, the voice of Appa himself, Carson Taver, showing up. He's like, you sound familiar, did you fly a Razor Crest? And it's like, oh, because that ship was spotted on Navarro. And I'm just trying to put some stuff together here. You know, and he's like, yeah, no. And then he uses like the this special kind of thruster installed, where he just flicks a switch and it's like, whoops, off he goes. And the kid is just like, I don't see him engage his hyperdrive. He's like, that wasn't his hyperdrive. He just basically, that was his thrusters. It's like, oh, okay. So gets away from that, and lands back in back at we're back with Pelimoto, and she's like, oh, that was it. And he's like, this is amazing, I loved it, kind of thing. And I said, oh yeah, friend of yours came by. I didn't let her in, and I've locked all the security hatches, so she can't get in. He's like, oh, what was her name? Benix Shand. And I'm like, oh yeah, she won't be locked out. She just climbed in, which is hilarious. And and she's like, yeah, you want a job? He's like, yeah, okay. What's the bounty? He's like, no, bounty, we need muscle. He's like, for Boba Fett? And she's like, yeah, you'd really appreciate it. On the house. Oh, see, that was the thing. I was just like, Din Djarin being paid by Boba Fett? I'm not quite sure about that. Wouldn't he do it for free based on everything that Boba did for him in the last season of Mandalorian? Yes, he did. And I'm happy about that. And he's like, but first I gotta go see a little friend. And I'm like, oh, yes. And I'm not gonna lie, I rolled a tear when he said that, because damn, I did not think we were gonna get this. I mean, I didn't think we were gonna get this episode. I thought this episode was gonna be, you know, oh, Din does a job and then goes to Tatooine and is like, what's up? And he's like, right, I need muscle. And he does muscle things. No, I was wrong. And I'm glad I was wrong. I think for me, that episode, in my conversation with Greg, because once I realised that he'd only just started watching it, I was very careful what I said. The one thing I did say was like, okay, so here's what I did. I watched it, like, what, 5 minutes, I watched 10 minutes, and then I finished it, and finished it 20 minutes before he first messaged me. And I'm like, dude, like, I personally, for me, this is the most perfect Star Wars of the Disney era. Because I came out of that, I think the only time I felt remotely as close to how I felt after that one, after watching that episode, was when I saw The Force Awakens. Because I was just grinning from ear to ear. It was amazing. I loved it. You know, I was absolutely in love with what I'd seen, and I still love Force Awakens, don't get me wrong, and this isn't like a slight against any of the Disney content, okay? But I mean, I walked out of The Last Jedi, the first time I saw Last Jedi, I walked out of it feeling confused and unsure, because I'd just seen Luke Skywalker die. It wasn't like kind of what I expected from Star Wars, and this wasn't me going in, oh, I expect Star Wars to be this, this and this. No. But it was a very different kind of Star Wars. The same with Rise of Skywalker, as much as I enjoyed that when I saw it, and I still enjoy it. But, you know, I came out of that at the cinema, like, wow. But there was something about this episode, and for me, yes. That it has taken everything that we got from Disney, and it's just, and even not just Disney, so, you know, we've got some top tier Clone Wars content in there, we've got Rebels, we had Fallen Order, prequel, I mean, the prequel love in this episode is phenomenal. Like, and all of it was just, every moment, every square inch of this episode was Star Wars. It felt Star Wars. Every inch of digital film was just a joy. An utter, utter joy. Like, I couldn't sit and nitpick. I couldn't sit and gripe. I just... was wonderful, beautiful, and amazing. And, you know, then you start seeing stuff online. People go, oh, I feel kind of guilty for really enjoying this episode because it's not like Boba Fett episode, it was The Mandalorian. And then other people went, it was the best episode, but it doesn't belong in this show. Actually, it kind of does, because it actually does this thing. It actually stops us from doing something. It stops us from having Din Djarin turn up and us like, what's he been up to then? Okay? Why hasn't he got the spear? Because the spear is gone. Okay? Like, everything that happens in this episode would have still happened. We just wouldn't have seen it. And then we'd be like, oh, where's the spear? Oh, what's up with his leg? Oh, why's Grogu back? Because obviously he's going to get Grogu. We did need this episode. This episode had to happen. And Jon Favreau even stated, back when it was first announced, that this is The Mandalorian 2.5. So, essentially, what we are getting here is, like, this episode, and I think next episode as well, the next two episodes, this episode and then next episode, is basically the setup. And whatever happens in episode 7 with Din Djarin as well is going to be a setup for Mando season 3. And so, yeah, I personally think we needed this episode. Because it was so well done as well. Do I wish we'd have seen some Boba Fett action? Yeah, of course I do. It's a Boba Fett series, for God's sake. Do I feel like having no Boba Fett in this episode hurt it? No, personally, I think the episode was well done, and I think, you know, we got the story we needed to get to kind of get the characters where they needed to be. And this is the great thing about Jon Favreau. He doesn't waste time. He doesn't waste minutes in these episodes. He basically just tells the story that needs to be told. And I really think this story and this episode needed to be told. Because Favreau gets the fans. He knows that we would be like, well, what's going on here? Why is this? And why is that? And what's going on? You know, everyone would be like, the questions. But to move the story forward, we wouldn't get the answers. Or we would get the answers, but it would be like, oh, yeah, this happened. Oh, yeah, that happened. Instead of us seeing it. And do I feel like it's detracted from Boba Fett's storyline? You could say it has. But at the same time, you know, having Boba Fett turn up in Mando, could you say that distracted from the main, from Mando storyline? Even a little. Could you say that? And I think, yeah, we could. I again reiterate my desire for Bryce Dallas Howard to get her own series. She needs to run a series. She needs to do like the Robert Rodriguez and run a series. I think she's got the clout now. She is by far the queen, I think. She's definitely the Star Wars director queen. Will that title be taken away with Deborah Chow and the Obi-Wan Kenobi series? I don't know. It could possibly happen. But, you know, Bryce Dallas Howard has done 3 for 3 episodes, and they are all top tier. Like, her first episode, chapter 4 of season 1, that was like, I kind of felt like it was going to be the slow one. It was like a break, and it was so perfect. It was so well done. It was the episode that we needed at the time. Her second episode, was it chapter 10? No, chapter 11, when they're on Trask, and Mando meets Bo-Katan and Cosca Reeves and Axe Wives, and they fight Titus Welliger. Like, she proved that she could tell a great story in the first one that she did. In the second one, she proved that she could tell a great action story, because that's what that one was. It was a full-on action story. And this one, she kind of put it all together, everything that she'd done in those two episodes, and just went, hey, bang, here you go. By the way, I will collect my award on the way out, because that episode deserves a freaking award. For, like, outstanding piece of television. Because, seriously, absolutely freaking amazing. And kind of like my interactions with Greg were hilarious. So, like, every now and again, there was one point where he said, oh my god, the door. So when he says to me, and I'm going to tell this quickly and then I've got to go, because I've just arrived at work. So, he put, he was like, the forge, I swear that was the forge symbol on the door. And I basically just wrote in messages, went 3. So these are 4 separate messages. 3, 2, 1. Me counting down to what comes next. And then a second after I'd done that, he goes, oh, the Forge Master! The armorer. And he was just like, he was so excited. And he was like, he's like, oh, I can't believe this. And I'm just like, just you wait. So then he's like, the jetpack boy, oh, can never remember names. And then he thought, oh, I thought they were all dead. And so I said, oh, no, I think most were killed, but I think she does say that some go away. So then you get kind of like a couple of, bit. And then, the classical battle, oh my god! I'm like, you won't believe me, but it does get better than that. And I'm like, how are you doing? She went quiet for a bit. And then next bit, he's like, oh, Mrs. Gregor. Oh, he's BD, is that BD from Fallen? Is that an effing Naboo fighter? And I'm like, it is. And it is. And then, so I had to explain that it wasn't actually the same BD droid from Fallen Order. But yeah, it was so funny, and I really love kind of that interaction. I was like, oh, Greg, you're just a joy. I love you. But anyway, right, I've got to go to work. So thank you all for listening. Please follow me on Twitter at LifeDebtJohnny. Join the Facebook group. It's in the show description. If you like what you hear and you like what you read on the blog, which is mystarswifedebt.com, then please head on over to patreon.com/mystarswifedebt. Once again, thank you for listening. And punch it chewy. Oh, Yum Nubbin this week is going to be a bit late because of that banging headache I had. I was going to record this last night and then record Yum Nubbin now. I haven't recorded Yum Nubbin because I haven't watched the next episode of Ewoks, but that will be out probably Saturday. But anyway, get to Patreon so you can listen to Yum Nubbin. So yes, that's it for this week. Thank you very much, and punch it chewy.